Mr. Hotz. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And Ms. Imroth.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No questions, Your Honor.
Then, Mr. Hotz, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Edward Hutz. I practice law in Omaha, and I represent Brush & Company. This is a breach of contract dispute over one of two contracts designed to redeem Brush & Company's 50% interest in W.O. Zanger. Both of these companies are agricultural-related companies operating in Valley County out of North Loup, Nebraska. The facts of this case are really undisputed. In 1984, Brush reorganized WOZ and saved it from foreclosure during the difficult agricultural time. Under the terms of that agreement, Brush exercised an option to get and own 100% of WOZ in 1992. And again, through undisputed agreements in 2005, there was an agreement that Brush sold to Charles Zanger, the patriarch of W.O. Zanger, 50% of that interest. So as of 2005, Brush owned 50%, Chuck Zanger owned 50%. Because of some issues involving the business and the operation of the business, in 2008, the parties entered into two agreements for the redemption of Brush's interest. The first agreement has been fully performed. It provides for payment of cash and transfer of a farm called the South Place. The second agreement, which is at issue here, was a 26-year lease of the South Place back to W.O. Zanger.
That's the farm lease that was the subject of the interpretation by the district court. Exhibit 16 was entered into contemporaneously with an agreement to which you have referred, which I believe is Exhibit 17.
Same day.
In interpreting the meaning of the farm lease, is it your client's position that both of those documents should be considered?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then to take that a step further, the Exhibit 17, the other agreement in 2008, refers to a 2005 shareholders agreement.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And which is in the record, I believe, as Exhibit 46. Is it your client's contention that in interpreting the meaning of the farm lease, that document should also be considered?
Yes, Your Honor. There were a number of agreements between 84 and 2008. The 2005 agreement, in which the parties ended up 50-50, contemplated a redemption at some time in the future. So to get the whole picture of the transaction and the relationship between the parties, you got to look at all the contracts.
Now, but you're going then beyond the three that I have mentioned, because there were two others in 2005. Are you, even though they're not referenced, the operation and maintenance agreement and I forget
right,
the other one.
Right.
They're not referenced in the 2008 agreements, are they?
I don't believe so.
So is it proper for this court to consider those two agreements as part of this transaction?
Your Honor, I think the dispute arises under the terms of the farm lease, which provided for lease payments of 25% of pre-tax pre-bonus profits to Brush through 2034. With this three-year renegotiation obligation of minimum rent, there's really no issue about what the total rent is, 25% pre-tax pre-bonus profits. There was this prepayment of minimum rent, which the farm lease provides, should never be less than $35,000.
Your opponent takes a different view of what we might call the floor that you argue.
That's correct.
So I think then it becomes, what specifically are we to look at? Only within the four corners of the farm lease, or at the other 2008 agreement, and also the 2005 shareholders agreement reference therein, look at all of them together? What's your client's position?
Your Honor, my client's position is that the obligations of Brush to Zanger and Zanger to Brush were rolled up in the 2018 agreements, one of which was fully performed.
2008?
I'm sorry. Yeah, 2008. The farm lease and the other, Exhibit 16 and Exhibit 17. And it's explicit. The farm lease provides that the parties had an obligation to renegotiate that minimum rent. But it does, that minimum rent was a credit against the total rent of 25%. So it's also undisputed. In the basis of this cap on rent, in the renegotiation month of January 2019, Zanger would not discuss minimum rent renegotiation without a cap on rent. The origin of that was an addendum that was entered into in 2016 that expired in 2018, in which Zanger gave up the right of first refusal on the South Place in return for a cap on rent. But it's undisputed that cap on rent disappeared at the end of November of 2018. It's also undisputed that there was never a discussion by Zanger or an agreement by Zanger to discuss minimum rent in January of 2019 without a cap on rent. And Brush specifically asked the question in an email, I think it's Exhibit 34, what minimum rent would be acceptable to WOZ for the next 3 years? And their answer was, they didn't answer that question, but they never got off their position that there would be a cap on rent. The motivation, I think it's undisputed here, is that Zanger thought that their father, or the patriarch, Chuck, made a bad deal in 08, that they were paying too much money. Both Charles Zanger and Josh Zanger, the officers of the corporation, both testified, you know, this was too expensive. It was impairing our cash flow. It was a bad deal. We needed to either get a cap on rent or we need to eliminate the obligation. So there's no dispute that there was, the motivation was to eliminate their obligation to Brush or cap it. And there's no dispute that there was no contractual basis in the farm lease for a cap. So the issues, our position is that by insisting on a cap on rent when negotiating a contractually required term, minimum rent, was a violation of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. Issue number one, does that duty exist in all contracts in Nebraska? We think so. The cases say so. It's not a direct term, it's an implied term. If that is the case, and Judge Noakes had a question about whether an action based upon the violation of the duty of good faith and fair dealing was legitimately recognized in Nebraska. She seemed to recognize it, but when she issued her order in June of 2022, she said, kind of in general terms, that Zanger had complied with all of its obligations under the lease and dismissed any further claims that Brush had. So the question then becomes, if there is a breach of that duty, of that term, what is the remedy? We say the remedy is expectation damages, which is supported by the Entergy Arkansas versus Nebraska case. The other issue is when Brush agreed on January 31, 2019, he sent an email. He said, all right, I'll take $35,000 as the minimum rent. We believe that that ends the story. We believe that the farm lease clearly states that the minimum rent should never be less than 35, and when Brush accepted 35, that was the end of the conversation.
You have asserted in your second assignment there that the court erred in granting partial summary judgment on the interpretation of the lease. If we were to agree with you on that argument, what happens? What follows from that?
What follows from that is that the relationship between the parties is over. Brush has the farm ground, but he has a claim for damages out to 2034. So what we're asking for is not to let W.O. Zanger hijack or take for itself the profits that it would be payable to Brush. It's a damage claim. And we're asking the court to remand and remand this case to the Valley County District Court for a trial on damages.
How do you calculate the expectation damages if we don't know what WOZ would have agreed to?
Well, you base it on the 25%. You've got a history of profitability, and if you look at, I've got a couple of illustrations in the brief based upon exhibits. Between 08 and 19, the sales of W.O. Zanger went from about $1.5 million to $6.5 million. There is I think Exhibit 40 reflects what the rent payments were during that time, and they were as high as 300 and some thousand. They were as low as about 90,000. So you have a history of calculating damages. So you just project those out into the future.
And this is what your expert used to project
into. Correct. Which Judge Noakes, in her motion in limine order, wouldn't allow any evidence of expectation damages. I see I'm out of time, so unless you have questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you very much. Ms. Enroth.
Good morning.
Good morning again. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Liz Lubert Enroth, and I represent W.O. Zanger & Son, Inc., which I'll refer to as WOZ for the purposes of these arguments. Present today with me in open court is Chuck Zanger, who is chairman of the board for WOZ. I'd like to start out by addressing what I believe is a misstatement by Mr. Hotz in his discussion of the lease, and that is his characterization of minimum rent as just a credit against the possible additional rent. That would not be true in all situations. It would be possible for the parties to arrive at a minimum rent that would exceed what Brush & Co. would otherwise be owed under the 25% of pre-tax, pre-bonus net profits.
Did that ever occur during the term?
It did not occur.
Counsel, you heard my questions to Mr. Potts about the documents that we should consider in interpreting the farm lease.
Yes.
Do you agree that we should consider the farm lease itself, Exhibit 16, Exhibit 17, the other 2008 contemporaneous agreement, and Exhibit, it's 47, 46. The shareholders agreement in 2005? Do you think we read all of those together?
No, I believe that the lease is clear and unambiguous on its own, and so reference to outside documents would not be necessary.
Is the 2008 agreement an outside document?
I think that it is.
Well, don't we have a long line of cases that say when multiple documents are entered into between the same parties at the same time, as part of the same transaction, you construe them all together?
I will trust that Your Honor is correct in that.
Assume that we've said that many times. Don't we at least have to consider the 2008 agreement together with the 2008 farm lease document?
Your Honor, if that's correct, then I would agree with looking outside the 2008 agreement as well, because I believe the 2008 therein references the 2005 agreement, which significantly in 2005, the parties agreed that Brush shall lease or offer for lease the South Place to WOZ, but did not require that lease. And so that goes to the importance of the lease and any sort of compensation to Brush, which is the point of their argument.
So let's assume for the moment that we disagree with the district court's interpretation of the farm lease. Where does that take us?
I believe it...
We'd have to reverse, obviously, the partial summary judgment. But where does that take the rest of the case under that assumption, which I know you disagree with?
Sure. So I just want to make sure I understand the question. So is the question if the court's finding that the lease was not enforceable through 2034 were reversed, then what would happen?
No. My question is, if the determination of the meaning of the farm lease in the partial summary judgment, that there was not a floor of $30,000 is incorrect. If we decide there was such a floor, where would that take us?
If the court decided that there was a floor of $35,000 on the negotiations, then I believe it, the situation would be that we would be back in front of the district court arguing over some of the issues that I raised in my brief regarding the admissibility of Brush's expectancy damages on the basis of the expert's good faith basis for its opinions and errors that were contained in that opinion.
Okay.
So the court mentioned disagreement with the interpretation of the lease, so I just would like to touch on that briefly. Section 4 of the lease sets forth minimum rent for only the first 3 years of the lease. That's clear.
Is it clear?
I believe so, because...
Where do you get that?
So
that,
if
that
you...
it only applies to the first set of years.
The specific language is that owner or its assigns rent in the minimum amount of $35,000 each year, with said $35,000, so referring back to that initial amount, being paid on May 1, 2009, March 1, 2010, and March 1, 2011. So the plain reading of that provision sets minimum rent for only the first 3 years of the lease. In order to understand what minimum rent would be for the remainder of the lease, we have to look to Section 5, which requires the renegotiation. Within the renegotiation clause, there is no minimum rent specified. It just dictates that the parties are required to negotiate every 3 years. And then in the latter half of Section 5, we have the termination clause, which actually does reference a $35,000 minimum rent, but it references $35,000 in regard to what would happen in a tail period in the event the parties don't reach an agreement in their minimum rent negotiations. The next issue I'd like to address is the question of whether Nebraska even recognizes a contract to negotiate. We submit that it does not, and we base that position in part on Schlakey v. Jacobson. In that case, the court expressly found that the parties did reach a meeting of the minds regarding their agreement to renegotiate a contract, but then ultimately determined that that agreement was not enforceable as a contract, and we think that that would apply to Brush's claim for breach of an agreement to negotiate in good faith in this case. The district court did attempt to distinguish this case from the case at hand and noted that this case involves a breach of an obligation to negotiate in good faith, whereas in Schlakey it was just breach of an obligation to renegotiate. But Brush's claim is based on the duty of good faith and fair dealing that's implied in every contract. So if there is no enforceable contract, then there is no duty to negotiate in good faith. And we believe that this issue is significant because it would dispose of two of Brush's four assignments of error. It would dispose of the issue of whether WZ negotiated in good faith, and also the issue of whether Brush's expectancy damages should have been admitted. The next issue I'd like to touch on is the question of whether the district court committed clear error in finding that WZ negotiated in good faith. Brush's contention on this issue seems focused on the sole contention that WOZ's inclusion of a cap on possible additional rent was somehow a per se violation of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. Brush references this rule summarily. There's no authority to support that position. And so we don't think it's good law, and we think it would be inequitable to apply that rule in this case, based in first on the fact that in response to WOZ's initial offer of the $80,000 minimum rent and $120,000 cap, Brush responded with a close but similar minimum rent and cap on possible additional rent. This set WOZ's expectations for what it might achieve in negotiations going forward. And so for Brush to turn around and say, well, yes, I negotiated with the cap, but when you did it, it was bad faith, we think would be highly inequitable. Further, Brush's burden of proof was to show that WOZ violated, nullified, or significantly impaired a benefit of the lease, and we submit that WOZ's offer did not do that. We had testimony at trial that the $80,000 minimum rent would be for WOZ compared to other leases it had in the area, a very premium level of rent. And so Brush was offered downside protection at a starting premium level of rent, which goes back to our discussion earlier where did they have a higher minimum rent than ultimately was due and owing at the 25% pre-tax, pre-bonus net profits?
The district court, in your interpretation of things, said that your client bargained in good faith. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what deference do we owe to that determination?
That would be a clear error. We'd review for clear error because it was a factual determination. And so the $80,000 was a starting point that protected Brush's interest. And then any amount that Brush would be owed under that lease, up to $120,000, would have been meaningful participation in the pre-tax, pre-bonus net profits. So that offer ultimately honored the spirit of the agreement and did not violate, nullify, or significantly impair a benefit to Brush under the lease. The final issue that I was hoping to touch on is the district court's exclusion of Brush's purported expectancy damages. We do not believe that that was an abuse of discretion. Brush has never cited any case where a court awarded expectancy damages based on a breach of an agreement to negotiate. I see my time is up.
You may complete your thought.
Thank you. Brush has never cited any authority of a court that awarded expectancy damages based on this type of agreement. And the district court did review those outside cases from outside this jurisdiction and determine that reliance damages were an appropriate measure of damages, and we submit in this jurisdiction that would also be appropriate because expectancy damages would be speculative based on an unformed contract. And if there are no further questions, thank you. We request that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in Brush & Company versus W.O. Zanger & Son, Inc. So you are excused, and the court will go to the next case of the day, which is 407 North 117th Street, LLC versus Harper.